This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
BFM 89.9, this is the morning run and you're here with Xiaoning. It has just gone past 7:06 in the morning and it's a Tuesday, 5th of January. And in about 15 minutes, we'll be speaking to political commentator Professor James Chin on the Sarawak state elections and, of course, the contentious seat allocations. But before that, yesterday in US markets, the Dow Jones was down 1.3%, the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 were both down 1.5%. Meanwhile, we look at Asia, Shanghai was and Hang Seng were both up 0.9%, while the Nikkei 225 closed down 0.7%, the Straits Times Index was up 0.5%. And the FBM KLCI was actually down 1.5% because, if I'm not wrong, regulated short selling was allowed and we did see glove makers come under pressure. But for more on where global markets are heading, we have on the line with us Joe Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, with us. Good morning, Joe, and a happy new year to you. Now, what are you expecting to see in the FOMC minutes when they are released tomorrow? Do you see the Fed buying treasuries more on the short or long end of the curve?
Well, I think the Fed Reserve will signal to the markets that they're going to stay very active in the credit markets, buying long-term paper, short-term. If you know, they're still in that whatever it takes mode. We've got some numbers, you know, the GDP numbers looking a little bit stronger here. So, but the Fed wants to maintain that momentum, that recovery underway well into the first half of this year till it's self-generating. So the Fed is going to remain very supportive for U.S. equities.
And staying on this topic, Joe, do you think inflation will rear its ugly head? Well, some would say it's actually a good head this year.
That's a great question, and that's something that's top of mind on Wall Street. You know, some people would argue we have inflation in asset prices. I don't think that's true in terms of the valuations and earnings potential upside. But, you know, we do expect maybe the second half of this year, you know, services, goods, you're going to see a big snapback in spending and demand. And already companies, whether they're making trucks or, you know, Peloton bikes, they're having a hard time keeping up. But it hasn't fed into inflation just yet. So I think we get more reflation than inflation this year, and that's positive for the markets.
And if we look at the U.S. dollar, right, it has come under incredible pressure, of course, leading to the onshore yuan. They've broken the 6.5 level against the greenback. Is this expected to impact China's export-led recovery down the track?
It could slow it down a little bit, but I think the Bank of China could be back in the market, so kind of holding the line on the currency. No doubt, you know, the dollar is weakening here. We're looking for more moderate weakness in the dollar over the balance of this year. But that's good for the emerging markets. That's good for global growth. That keeps a lot of dollars out there. It's good for corporate earnings, overseas earnings. So to me, the dollar, I think, is kind of a tailwind for global equities in general, particularly the emerging markets and China, for that matter. China is getting more investment in consumption-led growth. So that'll offset some of that weakness in exports.
And are you very optimistic about China and China stocks for 2021, Joe?
Well, we're optimistic. I'm optimistic about, you know, China leading the way in terms of real GDP growth. A lot of that good news has already been priced into Chinese equities. We still like the big Chinese tech names. They're leaders in their respective category sectors. Healthcare, I think, is a growth industry as well. In China, it's electrical vehicles, you know, anything green, renewable energy. So there's a lot of opportunities in China for investors still, for sure.
And somewhat related to green energy is, of course, oil, which is not a beneficiary of it. But after OPEC's first meeting for 2021, where do you see the bloc moving in terms of increasing production quotas?
Well, I mean, they've had a nice bounce here in the energy prices, supply and demand. The demand should pick up as we normalize, as we get the vaccine out there, people are vaccinated. And if we're, you know, we're looking for a global synchronized expansion. And so I think the key is, you know, how much will the U.S. oil producers come back online? The rig count collapsed here in the United States and it's rebounded. So I think, you know, oil walks a fine line here. We're not looking for anything dramatic on the upside. You know, anything like $60. But I think we're going to see firming oil prices over the balance of this year reflective of good global growth. We need the transportation to come back, particularly airlines. And I think that's a story for the second half of this year. And that gives more of a bid for energy as well.
And looking across the pond from the US is, of course, the UK. Now, how rocky will the road be for Britain's financial markets as it navigates a post-Brexit new year? Because I think, yes, there was a trade agreement or there was an agreement on the very last day. But what about financial services, which is actually one of the biggest components of UK's GDP?
I mean, that's another great question because, you know, London is the financial hub globally, not just in Europe, but transatlantic as well. I don't think, honestly, that London is going to lose too much when it comes to financial services. It's going to hurt the goods trade, manufacturing, cross-border, anything digitally, though. I think London's still going to be a major player. They have the infrastructure in place. Maybe Dublin gets a little bit more business, Paris, Frankfurt. But, you know, London, don't write off London because as a financial sector, you know, what's been true for over 200 years is going to remain true for the next couple of decades, in my opinion.
So does this mean you're still very bullish on the sterling pound, which is at a 19-month high?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's overbought here. I think, you know, kind of a, you know, the Brexit, the trade here. You know, actually, the stronger pound could hurt the FTSE, those big multinationals that depend on a weaker currency for growth. But in general, you know, the biggest hit for the Brexit really falls on the average person worker in the UK because they're going to see that I think their standard of living decline, their per capita incomes decline as they pull away from that big wealthy entity called the European Union. And they're going to have to work very hard to set up other trade deals, whether it's Canada, US, or you know, independently. So the UK's got a lot of work ahead of it.
All right. Thank you for your time. That was Joel Quinlan, Chief Market Strategist at the US Trust Bank of America Private Wealth Management, giving us his views on global markets. And I think he ended on an interesting point that UK is going to have to work a bit harder, or much harder, to get respective trade agreements with the likes of America, Canada. You know, it's not going to be so easy because they've just basically stepped away from all the trade agreements they enjoyed when they were part of the European Union. What were your key takeaways, Lynn?
When it comes to Joe, yeah, you know, he makes a good point because the UK is essentially starting from zero, right? Now that they're out of the European Union, and they have made some strides. I think they've signed something with South Korea. They've done something with Singapore, but there's still a lot of ground to cover. I was also quite interested by his comments about China, because even though we have been seeing all of this negative press surrounding Chinese companies being delisted from the New York Stock Exchange and possible regulatory issues that they're going to be facing, he's still quite positive on China. The word he used was optimistic, I think. And he still thinks that particularly big China tech has room to grow. So I guess that's very much a space that we're going to be watching too.
Yeah, and he was also very keen on China healthcare. And somewhat related to healthcare is Haven Healthcare. Now, this joint healthcare venture between Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan will shut down. When it was announced about 3 years ago in January 2018, it wiped out tens of billions of dollars in the value of other leading healthcare companies in anticipation of the potential that the three major US companies had to disrupt the spiraling costs of US healthcare.
Now, Haven Healthcare informed its 57 employees yesterday evening that it will close by the end of February, according to CNBC, which first reported the news. Now, most of those employees will take up or return to roles at their respective parent companies. A Haven spokesperson noted that the three companies will continue to work together on healthcare informally. While Amazon didn't comment directly on the shutdown, it emphasized this would not impact its telehealth service, named Amazon Cares, which is currently being used by its Amazon employees.
So this is one disruptor that did not disrupt and actually ended in a little bit of tears, right? Which is kind of unusual. But, you know, maybe not all disruptions prove to be invaluable or pave the way for new technology. But one technology, or I suppose one new phenomenon which has really been surging, is of course Bitcoin. Now, they rallied 50% in December, hitting a new high of $34,000 over the weekend. But the Bitcoin rally actually came to a halt yesterday as prices fell as much as 17% in the biggest drop since March.
But that said, you know, Bitcoin has still recovered and it's still above the $30,000 mark. It's up more than 300% over the past year, driven by all of this, you know, speculative fever from retail as well as institutional investors.
Yeah, but I still wonder, how do you value it? Because it's not like a company, right? There's no earnings. Is it really a question of demand and supply? But it looks like it's going mainstream, which explains the strong price performance. But up next, we'll be speaking to Professor James Chin of the University of Tasmania on the Sarawak state elections. Stay tuned for that. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.